Well, Jeremy Liebler is also a lawyer. He's also the president of the Zionist Federation of Australia, and at the ABC Religion and Ethics website, Jeremy has written a riposte to Josh Bornstein's piece. Jeremy joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Why, despite the protests that this visit has clearly caused, do you still believe the visit by Israeli President Herzog helps rebuild community cohesion?
From the perspective of the Jewish community, we've endured close to 2.5 years of weekly protests almost every main capital city. I'm a believer in free speech, and people who wish to protest peacefully should be allowed to do so. But the practical reality is that in many cases, these protests have effectively made the central CBD and certainly Sydney and Melbourne off limits for the Jewish community. And so I don't believe that a country's response to the worst terrorist attack in modern Australian history should be to be led by a group of, I think, quite extreme protesters. Instead, I think it's appropriate to look to what is actually going to bring comfort to the victims and their families and the community that has been most impacted by this horrible terrorist attack.
And it was, look, unquestionably an anti-Semitic pogrom. We said that on this program when it occurred just after the 14th of December. Tell me, though, what is your family connection to Isaac Herzog? Because it's quite long-standing.
There are strong links between the Herzog family more broadly, and both Australia and the Australian Jewish community. His father, President Chaim Herzog, almost exactly 40 years ago, came on a state visit to Australia, and that was in 1986. And the context of that visit, I think, is extremely relevant today, not just in symbolism, but in substance. It followed Australia, which was under the Hawke Hayden government at the time, playing a leading role in calling for the rescission of what is now known as the infamous UN resolution that equated Zionism with racism. And the state visit at the time was really in part to thank and acknowledge the leadership demonstrated by the Australian government. The resolution was subsequently rescinded in, I think it was 1991, and it was universally referred to as the Australian resolution. Mm-hmm. Australia led the way. Let's be clear. There were lots of disagreements between the Hawke government and the Israeli government over that period of time on policy issues, as there are disagreements today between the Albanese government and the Netanyahu government.
Yeah.
But what Australia's role showed then, as does this visit show now, is that friends can disagree on policy, but that Australia is committed to standing up for Israel's legitimacy as a Jewish state.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very important message, both for the Jewish community and the broader community.
I understand that for a significant majority of Jewish Australians, they will welcome this as a gesture of solidarity from the President of Israel. But, Jeremy, do the feelings of Palestinian Australians matter? Because they may well be traumatised by the visit by the head of state of a country that is engaged in undeniably a fierce retaliation. Now, it was a retaliation for an obscene terrorist attack, to be sure, but the Israeli military has now accepted the figure from the Gaza Health Ministry that there's at least 70,000 dead. Do the feelings of Palestinian Australians matter here?
First, on some of the facts there, yes, the military has accepted 70,000 people have been killed. What they don't accept is Hamas statistics that all 70,000 were civilians. If one accepts Hamas statistics, there was not one single combatant killed on the Palestinian side. But I think what you're asking in relation to the feelings of the Palestinian Muslim community, of course they are relevant and they are entitled to express their views. As I said, I'm a believer in free speech. But what we've experienced is the worst terrorist attack on the Jewish community, where 15 people, I think 14 or 13 of whom were Jewish, were murdered. That followed, you know, what I would describe as a summer of terror, where synagogues were bombed, where Jewish leaders' homes were bombed, where Jewish childcare centres were bombed. It is the Jewish community to whom the city has been off limits for the last 2.5 years. It is the Jewish community whose schools have armed guards standing outside. You can walk very freely into a mosque, into an Islamic school, into Palestinian community centres. There is not a single security guard outside. And that, I'm very pleased to say, is because clearly there are not ongoing visible threats. That's not to say there are not instances of Islamophobia in this country. There are, and they should be addressed. But Australia has just experienced this horrific terrorist attack directed at the Jewish community. So if the response is from Josh Bornstein or from anybody else to say, well, what about the Palestinian community? I would say they've had the last 2.5 years to express their views, and they seem to have done so by way of violent protests that have often incited hatred and violence.
Well, that's a big call, though, to make against an entire Palestinian community. I mean, Jeremy, you responded in your essay, very thorough essay, you responded to Josh Bornstein's essay, and he contains a case study here. What would you say to the school teacher, Sami Muammar? More than 100 members of his family have been killed in Gaza. I can't see him being comforted by President Herzog's presence, even though I acknowledge that President Herzog's presence is a strong gesture of solidarity with Jewish Australians. What do you say to Sami Muammar? He's a school principal. He's got nothing to do with the Hamas atrocity.
There are a few things that I'd say. The first thing I'd say is that Bondi was an attack on Australia. As I'm sure you know, it was targeted at the Jewish community, all of whom are very proud, upstanding Australian citizens. This was an attack on Australia, on Australian values. If anyone, whether or not they have their own trauma or they don't have their own trauma, is offended by a gesture of solidarity and comfort, which is entirely and very clearly not political, and the president has said that himself. I was there yesterday when he laid a wreath at Bondi, and he said, I am here to bring comfort to Australians following this terrorist attack. Implicit in your question here is a failure to differentiate between horrible suffering and civilian casualties that occur in war when a country is acting in self-defense and, for example, acts of terrorism like Bondi directed at innocent people. Mm. There is fundamentally a difference, and I think if a society fails to differentiate between those two, it's a pathway to a not very good ending for anyone concerned, especially Australia.
I know that President Herzog's comments, which have been reported as part of a deposition to the International Criminal Court, are highly contested. But look, what's not contested is certain symbolic things he did. He signed a missile that was later dropped in Gaza. I think he later said, or maybe that was a bit clumsy of me. I mean, are these the sort of messages of reconciliation that you would hope to receive from the President of Israel?
What President Herzog has said is that he signed a shell 6 days after the 7th of October, as we were still finding out, and Israelis were still finding out, which of their friends and family were murdered, were raped, or were being held hostage, either alive or dead, in Gaza. He acknowledged that it was, I don't think the word he used was clumsy. I think he said it was not the wise decision. He wouldn't make that decision again because of the optics, and I agree with that. In terms of what he said, it's not contested. One can go on YouTube and watch the entire interview. He said very clearly when it was put to him, what about the innocent Palestinians in Gaza? This is 6 days after the 7th of October. He responded to say the civilians, which is true, elected a Hamas government. That's not a question, that is fact.
Yeah,
Hamas
but a very long time ago, and part of the indictment against Hamas is that it hasn't allowed an election since. Well, that was very long time ago, Jeremy.
Yes,
and
the
indictment, Israel's indictment against Hamas is correct. It hasn't had and so we can't really test public sentiment, can we?
No. What he said was, is that they were elected and civilians were aware of what was going on. I don't think anyone contests that. There was broad popular support for Hamas in Gaza. When he was then asked, this is all on YouTube, a follow-up question, are you saying effectively this is a call for civilian for collective punishment? He explicitly said, absolutely not. Civilians need to be protected. But Israel is fighting a war for its survival against a barbaric terrorist organization. A barbaric terrorist organization that is inspired by the same ideology as those two individuals that murdered 15 Australians in Bondi.
Well, look,
and that's what Australians need to recognise.
Yeah, look, there's never been an apology for Hamas on this program. I can assure you of that. But look, let's go to something that's not ambiguous. President Herzog, I know that he has a reputation and a record on the centre-left. I know that he has spoken about peace in the past. But more recently, he described settlements on the West Bank as the cornerstone of Zionism and Judaism. Now, let me quote to you what the minister who's responsible for those settlements says, that these new settlements will deepen our roots in all the regions of the land of Israel and bury the idea of a Palestinian state. Doesn't this mean that President Herzog, for all his admirable record in the past, is joining that decision to bury a Palestinian state, bury the idea of a Palestinian state? He's foreclosing on it.
No, it's not. And that's for two reasons. First and foremost, I heard him yesterday at a press conference asked a question about a two-state solution. And he made the point that we need to reach a resolution with the Palestinians. But in the aftermath now of after October the 7th has changed the equation. And what that means is, and this is a reflection of the region, that Israel has learned from some of the mistakes of Oslo. I'm a very strong believer in a two-state solution. I believe that's in both Israeli interests and Palestinian interests. But we can't have a two-state solution with a terrorist organisation, Hamas. Australia has recognised that. This is why the Albanese government, notwithstanding the fact that they proceeded with a recognition of Palestine, have said they're not going to take any further steps in relation to embassies or representation or diplomatic status until Hamas is completely removed from power and there is a pathway to democratic elections within the relevant Palestinian territories. President Herzog is a man that is respected from both sides of politics. He was the former head of the Labour opposition. It's why he has a relationship with Prime Minister Albanese, with the Foreign Minister, with Richard Marles, because through the Labour, world Labour movement, there were always very strong relationships. Australia and Israel have disagreements on certain issues. But remember and be very clear, there is far more that we have in common than we have apart. Israel and Australia are both liberal democracies committed to the rule of law. One can be critical of decisions of the Israeli government, as one can be critical of decisions of the Australian government. The comparison to a barbaric terrorist organization like Hamas that still controls parts of Gaza, or the defunct Palestinian Authority that controls the West Bank that is in, I think Abbas is in his, I don't know if it's 24th year of his four-year term
four-year president. I know that line. I know it well. But look, let me just go back, though, Jeremy, to this point. I don't doubt President Herzog's record as a supporter of the two-state solution. But why would he say these settlements, West Bank settlements, are the cornerstones of Zionism and Judaism? Why would he say that and somehow pretend or claim to support a two-state solution when these settlements, honeycombed as they are now across the West Bank, make it impossible to have a contiguous Palestinian state on the West Bank?
With respect, that is simply false and a ridiculous statement, because in every single iteration of any proposal from the very beginning of Oslo, parts of the West Bank and settlements were always going to be included and incorporated into the State of Israel.
The ones very close to the 67 line.
Yeah, yes. So
But there are now settlements almost at the Jordanian border.
Yes, and unfortunately you're putting to me comments from the president that I have not seen, and unless you are aware of particularly which settlements he was referring to in those comments, it's very difficult, I think you would appreciate, for me to respond to. But I can tell you that every single iteration of negotiations for a peace agreement, by the way, let's remember the Palestinians were offered 97% of the West Bank with 3% and the entirety of Gaza, 3% remaining as land swaps from Israel proper, and they rejected it. When Ehud Barak was prime minister, Bill Clinton is on record. Again, it's on YouTube, and all of your listeners can Google it. Bill Clinton made it very clear. His greatest disappointment while he was president was the fact that Arafat was not prepared to accept the offer that was on the table that would have given Palestinians everything that they wanted, other than one thing: the destruction of the Jewish state. And ultimately, one can talk about settlements. The real barrier to a two-state solution has been the Palestinian refusal to accept the legitimacy of a Jewish state in that region. The rest of the Arab world has. The president of the State of Israel has flown on an Emirati airline. The Arab world is embracing Israel. It's only the Palestinians that continue to condemn their own people to never-ending suffering, as Hamas has done by launching this war on the 7th of October.
Yeah, those comments from President Herzog that I was quoting were in the Times of Israel on the 6th of May, 2025. Look, just finally, Jeremy, I understand that President Herzog is a symbolic leader. He does, however, have the power to commission governments. That's in the basic law. I looked that up on the Israeli presidency website. Now, part of the government that he has commissioned includes a man called Itamar Ben-Gvir. Itamar Ben-Gvir, before he entered the Knesset, before he became a minister in the current government, had on his wall a photograph of Barak Goldstein, a man who murdered 29 Palestinians at prayer. What does this say about a government that contains a man like that?
I consider Ben-Gvir to be a racist and an extremist, and I don't believe he should have any role.
But he is in the government.
In the Israeli government. But where I must correct you is that is not a decision that is within the power of the president. Israel is a democracy. And the president, yes, has to support the formation of government from the party or the group, the coalition that is most likely to be able to form a majority in the Knesset. This is the price of living in a democracy. You know, we have certain parties in Australia at the moment polling at very high percentages who over various periods of time have expressed, I think what most people would agree, are pretty racist views on certain issues.
Indeed.
That is not a reflection of the whole of society. I expressed my objection at the time, as did many in the Jewish community and as did many in Israel, about the inclusion of someone like Ben-Gvir in the government. Thankfully, he was excluded from the war cabinet and had no role in the war. But frankly, the most damage that Ben-Gvir has done is in his inflammatory rhetoric that has effectively brought so much stain to the reputation of Israel. But unfortunately, this is the price of living in a democracy, and perhaps the price of living in a democracy where a very significant proportion of the population are surrounded by, you know, multiple enemies who have sought to destroy it.
Yeah, I know you've spoken out against Ben-Gvir. I know that. I'm just wondering, could President Herzog have simply not said to Benjamin Netanyahu, I won't commission a government with this man in it?
I don't believe as a matter of law that he has the ability to do that. No.
He couldn't have sent Netanyahu back to the Knesset to say, find another partner to make up the majority?
Look, I'm not an expert in Israeli constitutional law, but my understanding absolutely is that his role is to support the individual, the party that is most likely to be able to form a majority. Remember, this was after the fourth or the fifth election within 6 or 7 months in Israel, you know, where there was massive instability. So, you know, there are obviously many other considerations there. But I think you would agree that one can go through the history of many, many politicians, especially ones that have been around for a very long time, and nitpick things that they have said or done that, you know, either in context or out of context, were not appropriate.
Yeah, but how many have deified a mass murderer?
Well, President Herzog has absolutely not done so.
We're talking about Ben-Gvir.
He was the leader of the opposition. He was Benjamin Netanyahu's political opponent here. And this is a man who has come, and, you know, we have the benefit of having this conversation now after he's actually arrived in Australia. I attended an event that was packed. There were, I think, over 5,000 people at the ICC in Sydney. Not just the Jewish community, but mostly the Jewish community. And it was uplifting. And while there were protesters attacking police, throwing things at police, breaching very clear rules and orders from the authorities, there were 4,000 members of the community mourning the death, the murder of 15 Australians who were killed for no reason other than they were at a Jewish event. Mm. The Premier was there. The Governor of New South Wales was there. The police received a standing ovation. The president got up, made it very clear he is not here for politics. He is here to bring comfort to Australia, to all Australians and the Jewish community. And frankly, that's exactly what he did. And what I would say to Josh Bornstein or anyone else that has an objection to that, so be it. The Jewish community is not going to hide behind walls. We are not going to be intimidated from living open, proud Jewish lives, not by protesters, not by the tiny proportion of the Jewish community who enjoy being in the newspapers. We are going to do what we have done for many, many years, which is continue to contribute to this country in every single possible which way we can. And we are going to focus on the overwhelming majority of Australians who have given us love and support and reaffirmed our place in this country.
Yeah. Does that mean, Jeremy, that you will be telling the world Jewish community Australia remains a safe and ideal destination for Jewish people?
I believe that Australia is a safe place for the Jewish community and for Jewish people. I believe that our government wants to ensure our safety genuinely, and I believe the overwhelming majority of Australians want that. But the reality is, Australia for the Jewish community is a very, very different place to what it was when I was growing up. And I grew up very openly Jewish. I wore a yarmulke on my head. I never, ever experienced anti-Semitism growing up at university, at school, in the workforce, until pretty much since the 7th of October. That is not the experience of my children. in this country. I believe that part of the problem is that when anti-Semitism goes unchecked and unchallenged, when we allow people to march through the streets calling for violence, it lets it out of the box. You know, anti-Semitism is never going to disappear. It's been around for centuries, but it can be pushed under the surface. And it was probably since the Holocaust for a long period of time in Australia. And now it's been let out. And it's going to take a lot of time and effort from our leaders and from the mainstream Australians to send a message to those that want to divide us, that want to spread hatred, that this is not the Australia we know.
Jeremy Liebler, President of the Zionist Federation of Australia and a prominent Melbourne lawyer, thank you for joining us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much for having me.
Getting in touch with ABCRN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.